Hi everyone, it's Cody from the Rancor's Brothel. If you haven't heard already, we're in a partnership with a great gaming company called Metallic Dice Games. They provide some of the best looking dice and accessories at an affordable price. And here at the Brothel, we're going to make that great price even better. By using our exclusive promo code RBP10 at checkout, you can get 10% off your entire purchase. Even better, Metallic Dice Games is giving a bit of it back to the show to help us cover expenses. So snag yourself a set of premium dice over at metallicdicegames.com and help support the podcast by using promo code RBP10. Check it out today.
Engage.
SOS meeting.
Third floor.
Yeah. You see that room 314 has a placard on the door that just says reserved.
Okay.
The light is on. The door is closed.
Okay.
The stench of coffee filters in from the door. Going in?
Yeah.
Okay. You open it up. How did you identify yourself when you wrote name?
I would have given a fake last name, but my correct first name.
Okay. You see, a fairly athletic looking, woman. Looks actually fairly built. Definitely works out a lot.
What's your app?
It's not app, is it?
No, not in this game. It's a different game. That's Cthulhu.
Her charisma's 13.
Yeah, mine's 10. So.
So she comes in. But yeah, no, she's
jacked.
Yeah, no, she's fairly fit.
Sure.
She's got a very high athletics rating. Comes in, steps up and gives you a very firm handshake. My name is Addison. Thank you. Thank you for coming. You must be Emily.
Yes.
Please help yourself, to some coffee if you want. Usually, Deborah will bring something to snack on. I think it's her turn. But please have a seat. And it's just sort of a small conference room. There's a table. You can see the coffee pot is got boiling hot coffee. You know, it's one of those urns. It just reeks of incredibly too strong coffee. And there's a group of chairs. You can see a few individuals standing around.
I'll do my best to introduce myself to, I mean, how many people? Like 4 or 5 people, probably?
You can see that there are 7 chairs pulled up.
Are there 7 people, though?
Probably not at this point, no.
Okay. Well, I will introduce myself to everyone.
Sure. People filter in, but we can just kind of go through it. So
sure.
You can take notes or whatever you want to do.
Right.
Addison, you've already met.
Yep.
Like I said, fairly athletic, young to middle-aged woman. You see, a much younger woman, probably, late 20s. Also in relatively good shape. She seems a little twitchy. Her name is, she introduced herself as Anastasia. Has a very sort of southern accent.
I would ask her where she's from. I love the accent.
Well, originally I'm from northern Florida.
They have that kind of accent in northern Florida.
Mm-hmm. I'm giving her some personality. Eat a dick, Lucas.
It's close to Georgia.
You see an Asian man, looks fairly young. You probably say maybe 20s, hard to say. He introduces himself as Klam.
Does he have does he have an accent, or is he actually
Americanized? No, he does speak with an accent. You do get sort of a you probably can't tell dialect wise unless you're going to throw that into one of your languages. But you do get a
it's feasible for me.
Yeah,
if I could ask him exactly where he's from.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's a question of what you
I mean, if he's from a clearly he's from a specific country, but like if he tells me what country he's from, I can write in that language.
If you want to tie in a major Asian language, I'd let you roll on it to see if it's how well or not well connected it is.
Well, where's he from is the question. Like it's a straight question. Like
he's from Australia.
Okay. That's not an Asian language.
No. From Australia.
you said Asian, not Australian.
Right. He is.
Okay, then never mind.
He is a man who looks incredibly Asian. Who
yeah.
says he's from Australia, and he speaks with a thick accent that implies Southeast Asia, China, Japan. Unless you have a way of necessarily knowing one of those languages, you couldn't narrow it down just by hearing him speak. Put it that way.
Well, I got okay. Out of game, I have a 50, a 50, and a 40 that I can work with.
Sure.
So I can roll on
if you wanted
50.
If you wanted to put, like what I'm saying is if you put Mandarin in there, you're going to know whether or not that accent is Mandarin. You may know if that accent is Thai, since that's close.
Can I roll on my blank 50? And if I succeed, I get the actual...
It's a luck roll at that point.
It's a luck roll? Okay.
The point of the rule is that you're supposed to just pick a language.
I know, but I'm trying to suss it out.
The white woman named Addison talked with an accent, too.
It wouldn't be a human roll, even?
No, I mean, you're telling me you can tell the difference between, say, Cantonese and...
Anthropology? I got 40% in anthropology.
No.
Oh, come on. That's the study of cultures.
Correct. Not necessarily their languages, though.
No. I ain't got
You also see an older man, probably in his late 50s, early 60s, has a little bit of a beer gut, but he also is incredibly athletic looking, given his age. Shakes your hand with a nice, firm, tight grip.
Do I get his name?
His name is Nick. Finally, a woman in her 40s, maybe even older than you, comes in. She's got some sort of pastries or something. They're pre-bought cookies, something in a plastic tin. I'm so sorry, I'm late. And she starts opening them up and setting them down. People kind of grab a cookie and a cup of coffee and go over and sit down.
Deborah, is it?
Yes. Addie said that somebody was going to be new.
Emily.
Nice to meet you,
Emily. Wonderful to meet you as well.
She shakes your hand.
That's all that show up? Four out of...
No, that's one, two, three, four,
five. Is Addison, plus me is six, so there's an empty chair.
Yeah. Okay. There's an empty chair. Addison sort of goes, it looks like everybody's here. If we'd like to have a seat, everybody get a cup of coffee or a cookie or something.
I will be bold enough to look around and go, are we missing someone? Just I saw an empty chair.
And you see that they all kind of look around and Nick's like, I'm sorry, I didn't think about it. Was just reflex. I'll put it back. And he starts to pick up the chair. And Addie's like, no, it's fine. And leave it there. I think it's a good idea.
I'm sorry. Are we missing someone?
Yes, one of our members is missing. But please have a seat.
Humint around the room?
Sure. Yeah, I'll give you a humint to read the temperature.
That's an 03.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of nerves. There's a lot of sort of like maybe pent up emotion, frustration. The room got icy when you asked that question.
Okay. Noted.
Sitting down?
Yeah.
Addison sort of, okay. Well, everybody welcome Emily to the group. Emily, I know that it's hard to share your story, but you're among friends. Okay, right? And she sort of nods, and everybody sort of nods. And it's not easy. People haven't believed you, but we'll believe, okay? We believe. So why don't we share our stories, okay? We'll start. We'll go around the room. And then, Emily, if you'd share your story... I think that would all help the group. And then we can talk about, with Emily, how we deal with what we're feeling and what we've experienced. Does that sound good to everybody? They kind of all nod. So as you know, she starts, and she launches into this story. And what you begin to find out is that Addison was a troubleshooter for the Center for the Missing Child. Essentially, the Center for the Missing Child is a nonprofit organization dedicated to finding missing and or exploited children. So you get the sense that she went after drug trafficker or, you know, sort of people that are trafficking children for like slave labor or sex crimes or, you know, people who've been kidnapped, stuff like that.
As someone who works in government, would I know what that is?
Maybe. I mean, it's one of those many organizations that does like good deeds, but like
it's not a government organization.
No, it's definitely not. It's a nonprofit. And she was working a case in Death Valley, chasing down a situation is kind of how she describes it.
Sure.
But she during the interview, this man who I was interviewing to try and find out about these children, and I was there with a group, a team, some folks looking for some children that we thought were missing in the area. During this interview, this sort of strange man that we were interviewing said that he was talking and we were taking tapes and recording. And what I can only describe as a child of the desert appeared, some sort of bizarre form, something that moved in the sand, something that I can't describe, and it attacked the group, and it started almost consuming people whole. There's blood everywhere. So I escaped into the desert. Wasn't found guilty for anything, but obviously the CMC got rid of me anyway. But yeah, to this day, I have no idea what attacked those people and what killed them. Anastasia goes. She was a med student. She is she's doing her residency right now here in Baltimore. But she was a med student in Florida. And she rented a house in order to pay the bills. She rented a house from an old man who never left his basement, which he kept refrigerated. And you're not really sure how the duck walk gets there, but it gets to the point where she was taking cadavers from the hospital for him. The rent was really cheap.
I imagine so, yeah. Okay.
But then one day while she was, when she was coming home, she could see that the house was on fire. And what looked like, you ever seen that, that Robin Williams remake with like the green guy that's all like a ball of goop?
Flubber?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Imagine that, but real big like, and like running while on fire. The whole bunch of those came barreling out of the building, and melted all over the lawn. I lived in my car after that. Still do.
I say nothing. I just nod.
Yeah, no. Clam then speaks up. He's a software engineer. He was on a flight to Australia for an important business deal. And it was hijacked by a group of individuals. There happened to be a U.S. Air Marshal on board who tried to attack the individuals. And the U.S. Marshal actually supposedly saved all their lives. But the two bits of information that he did get from this is that they were trying to hijack the plane to take it to Antarctica. And of the three terrorists that were shot by the U.S. Marshal, Klom was able to look at one of them, and they appeared to be a lizard man. Deborah just comes out and says it. She used to be a felon. Low-risk offender, drug-related crimes, but she served a short stint in federal prison. And then one day the prison, it just straight up burned to the ground. It was done by a sort of a living flame, this fire that seemed to have shape and form. It moved with purpose, melting steel and stone. And there were a group of prisoners, naked, covered in soot and singed. They were chasing the fire around, following it like they were worshiping it or some shit, I don't know. But I was let out shortly after that, overcrowding and such. But I'll never forget seeing that flame and those naked people chasing it. Don't know what to think. And then Nick speaks. Nick was celebrating retirement with his wife on a Caribbean cruise. After they left Port of Spain in Trinidad, the boat was hijacked by sailors turned pirate. He then describes the vessel as being boarded by, quote, fishmen who attacked the pirates, tearing them limb from limb and dragging their bodies off into the water. They never appeared to have any sort of boat or anything. They just disappeared the way they came under the waves. The crew immediately turned the boat around and went back to port, apparently whispering that there were much worse things out there in the water. Roll sand.
Ooh, failed that one.
We'll call it a D4. Okay. It's taken over time. You've been listening to these stories for the better part of 45 minutes. Yeah.
Four.
These people absolutely believe everything that they say. They are telling this as if they are confessing to a priest, and you get a lot of nods.
This character started with 75, by the way.
That's fine.
Only redeeming quality to this rando.
And then as Nick finishes up, they all turn and look at you. So, Emily, I hope you can trust in us the way we've trusted in you and told our stories. What's your story?
When I was around 12 or 13 years old, I went camping with my family in the Rockies, just at the bottom of the mountains, nothing, not at the peaks, of course, in the woods. We came across a spring to gather water. Close to the evening, we decided to set up camp. And as my parents slept, I awoke to some strange sounds. And when I peeked out of the tent, I noticed that there were some very odd creatures, almost rat-like. And I could have swore that I saw some of the trees walking, if they will. I screamed. I ran. And when I woke up, I was back in my tent. And I didn't feel right. And my parents never acted right. And we never had a good relationship since.
And did anything affect you or anything come of that? Anything you ever found out more of?
I felt very nauseous for months until I saw a doctor who did some x-rays, and everything was different than it once was.
How so?
And I explained the flip-flop of the organs that were not once a thing.
You see them all look shocked. Roll persuade?
I do have persuade. Oops.
You are lying. Technically, it's probably a fast talk, but you're telling it over a series of time, and you are prepared, so.
Fair.
It's a potentially convincing lie.
Do I have fast talk? Yeah. Fast talk's not on this game. I think it's persuade only.
Oh, that's right. I keep wanting to add it.
Yeah. Let's go through. That's 7th ed. Yep, 24 out of 50.
Okay. They all seem to nod. Okay.
Lost a die somewhere. We'll find it later.
Okay. Good. Thank you. Thank you, Emily. I know that at this point, everyone likes to get up and stretch a little bit. We now sort of move into the second half of the phase. Grab the meeting. If you'd like to grab a cookie, get some coffee, go to the bathroom. We kind of take a nice 10-minute intermission or so.
Of course.
And they all kind of spread up and move around. So at this point, the group kind of gets up, stretches their legs out of the conference room. Some people grab some cookies or some muffins. A couple of them go to the bathroom. You kind of have, you know, you get some downtime. So whatever you'd like to do.
What's weird, and maybe it's not weird, is that the description of everybody seems to be that they're like either very fit or athletic. You've noted that with everyone except for Deborah.
Addison looks very athletic. Anastasia looks very athletic. I don't think I said anything about the athletics of Klom.
Sorry, that is fair.
Klom does not look athletic. I'm just trying to get from their skill set, like, what you would be able to see.
Okay.
You know what I mean? And Nick looks athletic, but old athletic.
Mm.
Like, he definitely doesn't look like, he looks wiry. Once upon a time, he was probably super fit. And you could probably see as he, like, rolls his sleeves up or whatever, like, you can see old tattoos on his arms and stuff.
Gotcha.
But yeah, the fit ones are definitely Anastasia and Addison.
I'll approach Nick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's sort of, like I said, he's an older man. He's, like I said, late 50s to early 60s.
Like, what kind of tattoos am I seeing?
Do you have, you don't, I'm sure you don't.
Depends on what you're asking.
Do you have military science?
No, I don't.
They look sort of like faded old military tattoos, like years and years old. You wouldn't necessarily know.
And that's fair.
They just look like military tattoos.
So I wouldn't know whether or not to ask if he was in the service.
I mean, it's clear that they look like military tattoos.
Right.
You know what I mean?
If that's the case, I would ask him if he was in the service just to get a background on the guy.
Yes, ma'am. Retired Marine.
Ah, I see.
Served in the Corps almost 20 years.
Very well.
But yeah, no, welcome to the group. I hope that we can help you somehow.
Yes, I certainly hope so. And I'll ask him, do you know anything about the empty chair? Like, who are we missing?
You say, sort of puts his hands in his pockets. There's a guy who normally attends, and he's not here tonight. Just put it out of reflex, mostly.
Is that odd? Like, is he always here?
He's been here basically since the beginning. It's pretty unusual.
Should we be worried?
Humet roll.
It's a 22.
You feel the room.
That is, yeah, it's an extreme.
Yeah, so. I know. You feel the room like, not that there's a lot of buzz, it's only a handful of people, right. But you feel as if the temperature just dropped 20 degrees and there are a million eyes on you.
Okay.
I mean,
I just look around in the silence, that clearly silence that just hit the room. Like
somebody's mid-coffee stir and has just stopped.
Did I say something wrong? I'm just trying to...
Just poking the bear.
It's be supportive. Fine. It's a support group.
They just continue to sort of stare at you.
He didn't answer my question. Should we be worried?
Oh, no, I don't think there's anything to be worried about. Oh. Do you think there's something we should be worried about?
No, I mean, look, I'm new. I just, you know, it just seems like I look around.
Addison comes in and puts a hand on Nick, says, "Now, Nick, we can talk about whatever you want to talk about in the second part of the meeting, okay?" And he sort of nods. "I'm sorry, dear. Nick can sometimes be a little forthcoming with his ideas."
Sure. You know, I just want to make sure that we're all okay. And you know, if someone is missing, you know, I don't know. Do we reach out?
I don't think anybody is missing per se. But yes, no, we are a tight knit group. It is
What's the person's name that should be here?
You could tell that, like, you ever tried the patience of somebody that isn't supposed to get annoyed or upset?
Sure. Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
Very much like that teacher who's trying to misdirect you from the situation and you keep poking it.
Yep.
Yeah, that's his name is Daniel. Everyone, if we'd like to start the second half of the meeting, I think now's the time. If we'd all gather around, please, Emily.
Sure.
This is the part, hopefully, that you will find most enlightening.
Great. Absolutely.
So, and she sort of sits down. What have we found in the last week? She sort of looks around the room, and they all kind of stare at you and at each other.
I look around as if to say, I don't know what we're all supposed to answer to this question. Like,
Yeah. Well, Deborah says, I don't care what anybody says. Nothing, and no one that I've talked to, says that people can move and influence fire. It's just not possible. Nick's like, where are the tapes then? I've been looking for those, and you know, I just can't find them.
Well, have you ever seen a fire dancer?
It's not like that. And Klom is like, I'm telling you, we can continue to look for these things. We can try and find, you know, technological proof of the existence of these situations, but it's just odd how they never seem to come about. And Nick pipes up. He's like, because they're covering it up. And they all groan. You can feel that they're starting to get into
the debate,
a familiar debate.
Yeah.
Where people begin to bring up things. Some people talk about how this has to do with old knowledge and books. Maybe the Dark Ages, maybe, you know, the Renaissance, that these things are in books and that they manipulate reality. Others believe that these are aliens or that these are things that live in the dark corners of Earth. They live under the water. They live in the ice of the Antarctic, in the deepest jungles, at the highest mountains, that they are influencing it. Others believe that these aliens are recruiting. They're breeding. They want hybrids. You just start to hear a cornucopia of excuses, of reasons, of hypotheses. None of them are really producing any like actual evidence, but they continue to provide like images and pictures and ideas. So yeah, anything that you'd like to jump in on?
I mean, I would randomly ad lib shit, like somebody starts talking about the depths of the ocean, and I'll be like, well, yeah, but the very small percentage of the ocean's actually been discovered.
Oh, yeah.
You know, who knows what's down there?
You're right.
We're looking in space, but who knows what's in the ocean?
Oh, no, 100%. Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I just keep fueling the fire to...
Oh, it's easy enough to do.
Know. Yeah.
But they get more and more and more passionate.
Right. And whenever it comes to my air quote turn, like... I will talk about how, like, you know, ROUSs don't exist. That's a Princess Bride thing, right? Like, mm-hmm. And I start talking about these rats that don't exist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Just, like, fuel the fire.
Mm-hmm. Nick, who's gotten incredibly quiet, suddenly says, but they have to know.
They
know.
They.
Yes.
I point up.
No.
I point down.
No. Not aliens, not mole people.
Huh?
This doesn't go unnoticed.
Oh, you mean governmental?
Yeah. And it's only a matter of time before somebody says something or does something that will attract the attention of these groups.
And after what I can imagine is a slightly pregnant pause.
Oh, yeah. No. In the theater, we call it a pinter pause. It's an incredibly uncomfortable length of time pause.
I, you know, calmly chime in with, well, have they ever spoken to you? I say to Nick.
So you believe they're real? You believe they exist, these programs?
Well, I... Look, anything's possible.
No. Not anything. You do get the sense that they have sort of their own lines and their own thought mm-hmm, processes. Sure. But they're all sorting to turn in as this discussion is taking place.
And I say, it doesn't matter whether or not I believe they exist. My question to you is, have they contacted you? Have you spoken to someone in the government about these things?
Have you?
No.
And
my story hasn't come out until now. This is the group that I've spoken to.
And we thank you for your honesty. As Anastasia says. They all begin to sort of look at each other.
Should I roll a human on what's going on in the room?
No, you just it's uncomfortable. It's awkward.
It's clear. To me, it's clear.
Well, friends, I think it's about time to go. And she turns and looks at the clock. You've been here, I don't know, 90 minutes.
Sure.
And you see them all sort of like bunch up together. And they start shuffling towards the door. They seem incredibly unwilling to be out of almost near physical contact with each other.
Okay. I stick around and start, like, you know, stacking chairs. And, like,
oh, yeah,
start
no, they all clean up. It's a solid routine. Nick and Klom start stacking the chairs and, you know, Deb goes over and cleans up the rest of the cookies and tries to get them passed around, tries to convince, you know, Nick to take them home to his wife because now you know she loves these ones. She loves these cookies. And he shoves them, you know, next to his coat. But it's as if everyone's dragging their feet. Nobody wants to leave room 314.
Okay. I mean, my intent is to either wait till they're all gone, or if for some reason Addison leaves, like, my intent is to corner Addison somehow.
Yeah, no, you can
without everyone else around.
Sure. Yeah, you can.
Whether or not they all leave first and she sticks around, or she leaves first and I follow her out, whatever it is.
It's going to be challenging. You get the sense that they all, okay, let's go, right? And they all sort of like huddle and compress through the door almost at once, and they all wait for the elevator and get in. Come on.
Yeah, that's I'll get in.
And when they all come down, they all shuffle into the parking lot sort of at once. And you see two or three of them like go to the bus stop and stand, and like two or three of them wait around in the parking lot. Like two of them get into their cars and drive off. You see Addison is sort of, Addison does remain though. She does sort of stand watching like a hawk. So if you just continue to wait,
yes,
you might wait a significant amount of time.
And that's fine. I mean, I can pretend like I'm on my phone searching on Uber or some bullshit.
Yeah. Who are you waiting on, Emily?
Yeah, it's just been a weird night. I was hoping to just talk to you, and you seem to run the group. You seem to know what's going on with everyone. How long has this group been together?
A couple years. Oh. You see, she's watching, we'll say, who goes to the bus stop? Probably Deborah and Klom. No. Deborah and Anastasia.
Okay.
But she is like a hawk watching every single person that leaves.
Yeah.
And she makes sure they get on the bus, and she makes sure that Nick's wife gets in the car with Nick's wife, and Nick drives off, and, you know, Klom gets in his car and drives off, and same with Anastasia, whose car seems awkwardly packed with things. Her truck is awkwardly packed with
bags. No, she lives in it. Noticing this, I kind of look back to her and say, you seem to really, I don't know, shepherd everyone here.
Well, I think that, I think it's important to keep an eye on everybody, you know?
Sure. No, I mean, it's, you know, strange times, strange situations.
So what do you think about what Nick said?
Oh, which part?
That they know.
I think they do.
Really?
Well, sure. I mean, look, Area 51, right?
Yeah, but not in a showy no way. A way that they know that there are things out here that are hurting others.
Sure.
That are killing others. And they dispassionately allow it.
I mean, allowing it might be a stretch, I think. Maybe much like us civilians, we don't have control over it.
They listen into every single word we say, passively or actively.
Do you approve of that?
She holds up her iPhone and hits a button and Siri activates.
Fair point.
This thing knows where I am at any given time, all throughout my day.
Yeah. And people are afraid of vaccinations, right?
Just curious what he said about people coming, you know, looking for us. It's kind of a dangerous thought.
Yeah, you know, I got the feeling like he knew more and he just wasn't going to give it up.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, he's a military man. So he's probably used to stressful situations. He knows how to handle himself. He knows how to calm himself. Probably knows how to get himself out of a tight spot.
Maybe.
I had a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
It was clear that it was bleak in the room today.
Hmm.
What happened to Daniel?
I just don't know that Daniel made it, home after our last meeting.
What do you say that?
His wife reported him missing.
Oh, wow. Well, that's a drag.
Yes.
Do you know, like, what his story was? Like,
You know, the details of it I've heard many times, but something that sort of sticks out to me. 1 in 10,000, he said. 1 in 10,000 for Sidus and Versus. Very rare.
Yes.
Strange.
He's not wrong.
And my math's not great, but that would make it a 1 in a billion chance. Roughly. The two of you. In this group. It's weird.
Life is strange.
You're right. You're absolutely right.
Do you not believe me?
Of course. We're here so SOS exists so that people can tell the truth.
I nod.
I hope to see you next week.
I'll be here.
And Addison heads off to her car.
I'll do the same.